you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
The B-Mac and Pat P show. The hottest thing in the streets, baby. The hottest thing in the streets.
Yes, sir. Print the t-shirts.
Man, he been a model citizen. He changed the culture. AB is just like Tom Brady as far as when he hit that grass, he's all business.
Welcome to All Things Covered with Patrick Peterson and Brian McFadden, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. The name says it all. If you like what you hear, make sure you leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. Just visit youtube.com/allthingscovered. A little update from us. We've been mostly releasing episodes on Tuesdays during the season. But now that the off season is here, we'll be dropping new episodes on Wednesday. So make sure you subscribe and turn on alerts so you can get the show right away. Yo, Pat P, what are we going to cover on this episode?
Man, we got a lot to cover on this week's episode, Mac. We got curly hair Russell is not happy in Seattle again. We got J.J. Watt being released from Houston. Plus, we're going to talk to our friend, a former player of both of ours, former Blu-ray player of both of ours, a Super Bowl champion, former NFL champion as a player with the Pittsburgh Steelers, our brother, Larry Foote.
Larry Foote, stay tuned. Yo, All Things Covered, first quarter. You know what time it is. It's time to chop it up, chopping it up. And in this chopping it up segment, we're going to talk about the versatility that we potentially would have had to display if we were not good enough to play the game of football. Current news right now. 2-time Super Bowl champion Chris Hogan declares for the Premier Lacrosse League draft. So he's jumping from the NFL, entering to the lacrosse league. And I've watched lacrosse a little bit, don't know too much about the sport, but clearly to be able to be good enough to enter the draft, you have to have some athleticism to go along with what you can do as a player. And remember, Chris, he was catching touchdown passes for the champions at that time, the New England Patriots. Now he's trying to get into the lacrosse league. So question for you, Pat Pete, I'm pretty sure our listeners and viewers will love to hear your answer with this question. If you were to go pro in any other sport, I kind of know the answer already. What would it be?
Like, do we have to be, like, really good at it or just be, like, our dream to go to another sport? Like,
let's say pretty good at it. Let's say
all right,
growing up good as enough. A youngster and, you know, okay. Not, let's say if you didn't play football, what could you have played?
Okay. Well, now that I love the game of golf, it would definitely be golf for sure. You know, I don't think I'm tall enough to play basketball and, you know, those trees up on that hardwood. I think it's just – I mean, it's hard to make it in golf, but I just think you have to – everything has to match up for you on the basketball court for you to be a successful, you know, ball player. And, you know, average people in this world are football players. So, meaning like normal size people, you know what I mean? Basketball players are different, man. Those guys are freaking, you know, Amazon, you know, just you see a ball player like, man, how can a human be so lanky and tall? But, it'll probably be golf for sure. Because, you know, picking up the game of golf over the last 10 years, just fell in love with it. Just the way it forces you to think about every single shot. Every shot's different. Every ball position is different. Every pin position is different. So it's a lot that you have to equate into the game to be as good as you want to be. So it would definitely be golf. What about you, Mac?
Well, for me,
you think you got a jumper, man. I don't know about that.
Man. I mean, they used to call me Agent Zero now. Agent Zero.
Hey, so when you was at the free throw line, you used to put it behind your back too?
No, I didn't put it behind my back, but I can tell you this much about my basketball game. I would shoot myself into a zone. So if I wasn't in the zone, I was going to shoot until I got into a zone.
Like Kobe said, keep shooting. I ain't never off. Keep shooting.
No question. They used to call me Agent Zero, but I think me personally growing up, I always had a love for video games and I got my degree in computer graphic design at Florida State. So I wanted to create video games, but I also was a big time gamer. So I think now understanding and seeing where that profession is going, I think I would have probably been a professional gamer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just being able to devote all the time and attention to be better at playing video games than what I used to do. you know, I used to do it just, you know, leisurely. But, you know, if I had the time to be able to devote more time and attention to being a gamer, I think I would have been a professional gamer. And that's a big time booming business right now. Not just, you know, locally here in our country, but globally, you know, throughout the universe, you know, gaming is a huge industry right now. So I think I would have taken part in to that. And going back to Chris Hogan, he played lacrosse for 4 years at Penn State and only played football 1 year at Mammoth. So he has that lacrosse experience. But I think, you know, just being able to jump into the professional level is definitely eye catching. And one thing I'd like to highlight to you, Pat P, also with our viewers and listeners, transition to this study. 90% of the players on the Super Bowl rosters played two high school sports or more. So what is the benefits of playing multiple sports, especially when you're in the high school ranks?
I think it makes you a well-round athlete. I think that's what made me become a better defensive back by playing offense in high school, by playing different other sports, just seeing how your mind is able to react in certain situations, because a basketball situation may be different, but at the same time, you still have to be at your best when it's time to be at your best. So it's still getting you ready for football was always my main sport. So when I was running track, I'm going to be in those bright lights. So how do I handle those bright lights? How do I handle the pressure? Because it's never pressure to me, because I practice myself in those moments before. So now I just got to go out there and do it. But that's what the other sports did. It puts you in certain situations to see how you're going to handle it. So when it does pop up in your sport that you want to fully pursue, now it's going to be easy to you. Now it's going to be something that's not going to shock you when it's time for you to be at your best at that pressure moment.
And Pat P, what else did you actually play in high school outside of football?
I ran a little track, man. I wanted to play baseball, but I was not trying to get hit with that baseball, yo. And in high school, I know these kids, and it wasn't really accurate. I was like, man, I only know I can't even tell you what would happen if somebody hit me with that baseball and I got a bat in my hand. I probably would have been in jail somewhere. So I skipped out that, but I played basketball and ran track.
Okay. And looking at the actual numbers from the breakdown from players on the Super Bowl rosters, Kansas City and Tampa Bay, 10% only played football, 50% played two sports, 32% played three sports. You had 2% play four sports. So clearly, you know, two sport athletes that back then in their high school days dominated the Super Bowl roster. So that's definitely a key point to all you youngsters that are currently listening to us or watching us via YouTube. When you're in high school, try to play as many sports as possible, because just like Pat P just mentioned, one sport can help the other and vice versa. So you never know how sports can help you develop and become just a better all-around athlete. Now it's time to transition to another part of our show. With it being the off-season, we're constantly trying to change certain things up to keep you guys entertained. And this part is called Handling the Headlines. And what we're going to do here is, number one, we're going to talk about what we had to address last week. We covered a dirty rumor about Pat P's future on last week's episode, but there still have been some articles dropping our very own Patrick Peterson, featuring Patrick Peterson. So, Pat, I don't want you to react to these specific headlines, so I want you to keep your poker face as straight as possible, but I'll have a follow-up for you. So based on what happened last week with these dirty rumors circulating that you decided to part ways with the Arizona Cardinals, there are quite a few headlines that circulated throughout the football world involving you. Number one, this headline dropped last week. The Dallas Cowboys should pursue Patrick Peterson. Number two, this headline dropped. The Green Bay Packers free agency. Patrick Peterson is a prime target. Number three, coming from the Cleveland Browns, Patrick Peterson or Richard Sherman is a must this year. Number four, coming from Atlanta, should the Falcons consider Patrick Peterson in free agency? So the talking point for this segment is, you know, with your name, your name has been in headlines going back to your high school days because you've been that type of player. And currently, they're still in the headlines, not knowing exactly what will happen with your future, but they're already dropping headlines with your name with other potential organizations. How do you handle that as a player? And how much do you actually see or hear about these certain headlines involving your name?
Well, Mac, honestly, I don't pay, you know, too much attention to it. Not at the end of the day, I'm always been a guy of, you know, whatever happens, you know, it's out of my control. You know, I pretty much, you know, done all I can to put myself in the position to earn the right to play this game I love again, but I can tell you this for sure. I know I will be playing football for somebody next year. Mm-hmm. That I don't know who it will be with. But you know, it's going to be an interesting year. It's going to be, interesting month and a half, you know, as free agency and the new league year is about to start up. So it's going to be fun. Never been a free agent before, but you know, I'm excited. I'm excited to be going through this process. You know, most players, you know, want to have the opportunity to be able to, you know, not only pick where they want to go or be able to, you know, have that urge again of, you know, being wanted, you know, cause it's nothing like that draft feel, but once you get in the league, it's kind of like, especially if you're a guy that's not a journeyman or whatever, that's bouncing around, you know, you kind of miss that urge. So we'll see what happens, here in the next month and a half, but it's going to be quite interesting. So I'm excited, you know, I'm excited to see what's going to happen, but like I said, I will be playing for somebody next year for sure.
And, you know, speaking of being excited, how good does it feel to hear, coming from a dirty rumor that surfaced last week, so many teams are already coming up with headlines, like the Cowboys, you know, a few writers saying the Cowboys should pursue you, Green Bay, you know, Patrick Peterson should be a prime target. Hearing so many organizations already, like, just, you know, plotting, to say at least, if you were available, you know, trying to recruit you to their organization. How good does that feel?
Well, it feels great. Like I said, it's nothing like feeling wanted, you know, feeling like you can be, you know, that missing piece to help them turn that corner or that guy to help, you know, gel the locker room or help young guys come along or, you know, whatever it may be, you know. So this is an exciting part of my career. 10 years in, you know, I feel I got a lot left in the tank going on year 11 this year. Man, time flies, but it's a blessing to be where I'm at right now. And I always thank God every day. Thank God that I made it here.
No question. No question. With plenty more left to go. And we only just included those four teams. There were 20 plus teams that had headlines regarding your name as a prime free agent target. But we didn't want to cover up the whole show with all the teams that were trying to put you in their top list of free agents that will be available. But you will have a lot of teams, you know, trying to land your services. So we just have to wait and see exactly what happens. Now it's time for Around the League. And here's where we tap into all the big time news throughout the National Football League. Let's start off with one of my favorite quarterbacks. Curly haired Russell Wilson is unhappy with the Seahawks. Sleepless in Seattle. I think that was a movie, if not mistaken. Well, yeah. Reports, you know, came about that Russell was unhappy with the team's ability to protect him. He actually mentioned that. I think he was on the Dan Patrick show and he just came out blunt. It's possible, you know, they need to protect him better. Brandon Marshall, who was a former teammate of Russell Wilson in Seattle. He's a friend of the show. We had him on some months ago, said this on First Things First. Russell Wilson is beyond frustrated. I think he's trying to figure out how to move on in a classy way. Teams have reportedly been calling the Seahawks with interest. Russell Wilson has taken 394 sacks in his career, took the most sacks, 51 in 2020. In the regular season and one in the postseason. Thoughts about hearing that Russell Wilson, a guy you've played against twice a year, pretty much throughout your entire career, is frustrated with the Seahawks. What are your thoughts about that, Pat P?
I mean, you can tell, you know, obviously playing against Russell for the last, eight seasons of his career and, you know, being able to see him move around over the last three seasons. We're probably one of those teams that had to sack Russell in that 3-year span in six games, at least 30 times. I remember one time we sacked him like 7 times in one game, and we did that a couple of times because Calais had 4 sacks before against him. Chandler had 4 sacks. Mm-hmm. So you could tell, and every time he gets sacked, you can see that look on his face, like, you know what I mean? And he's been, you know, looking for help up front for a very, very long time. And that's why some of the times you're not able to see Russ, you know, ability to really, I mean, we know his ability to spin the ball, but Russ really never threw the ball on time. You know what I mean? He's always improvising. And the reason is because, you know, things break down or, you know, you hear things about, you know, the plays that's being called or whatever the case may be, but they definitely have to do a better job of protecting him and keeping him upright, because that's another thing. The guys have been hit. Well, how many times is that? 394
sacks in his career.
And he played 51. Every single game. Come on, man. Help that man out. Get something in front of him. And like I said, he's been wanting it forever, being able to not worry about improvising so much, you know, being able to stick with the game plan, stick with the, you know, the play that's called. So, you know, he's been crying out for it with his facial expressions on the field for sure. So hopefully, you know, they can get, you know, Pete and the guys upstairs can finally get him some help. But as far as teams calling for Russ, Russ ain't going nowhere. Unless Russ go up and be like, man, release me. They ain't trading no Russell Wilson.
Nah.
Exactly. It ain't happening.
I agree with you. And other news in National Football League, you talk about the sacks that Russell Wilson has had to endure throughout his career. This guy has been known to sack quarterbacks, and J.J. Watt mm-hmm. was released by the Texans. They mutually agreed to a release. J.J. Watt has been a baller when healthy. I mean, J.J. Watt, since entering the league in 2011, he ranks number two in sacks, 101, number one in tackle for loss, 172, number one in quarterback hurries, 281 to be exact. JJ basically came out with a statement. He said, I don't think it's any secret that I don't have 10 years left in this league. I personally believe that I do have a few more great ones left in me, but I can't be a part of a rebuild is what he said. I'm looking to go after a championship, and that's what I want to do. Hearing those statements from JJ and hearing that, you know, he's chasing a championship, you know, what does that For a player like JJ, you know, his career in Houston as an individual has been spectacular, but overall team success, they've always fallen short. But hearing that he wants to be a part of a championship, do you agree with that, statement coming from JJ at this point in his career?
Man, no doubt about it. You know, the game is the ultimate team sport, and all the individual accolades that he have, that's all fine, Danny. But he want to win that ultimate team achievement, and that's a championship. And you can't do that with one person. You know what I mean? It takes a collective group of men to go after, have be on the same page, have that same goal, have that same mindset to achieve that ultimate goal, and that's a championship. So, and like you said, he don't have 10 years left in him. You know, Deshaun don't want to be there. D Hop already left. He just hired a head coach and a GM. So you already know they're not going to be his guys. So, you know, why, you know, continue to sit around there when you feel like you have a lot left in the tank and be able to provided with the team that's going to be able to put your services to use versus, you know, going, you know, 4-11, I'm sorry, you know, 4-12, 5-11, you know, yeah. 6-10. That ain't cool. You know what I mean? Especially with all the hard work you put into and all the injuries and things you have to bounce back from. Yeah, I know everybody goes through it, but at the same time, when a player has a decision to better his career and be able to put his career in a better light, why not do it?
Yeah. And speaking of being a 10-year vet, you're also a 10-year vet as well. And both of you guys were a part of this outstanding 2011 draft. And for you guys that are listening to us or watching us on YouTube, man, I'm going to read off a few names, notable names, just from the first round alone from this crazy, crazy 2011 draft that Pat Peterson was involved in. Number one, Cam Newton. Number two, Von Miller. Four, AJ Green. Five, Patrick Peterson. Six, Julio Jones. Seven, Alden Smith. Nine, Tyron Smith. 11, JJ Watt. Mike Pouncey was 15, who just retired. Ryan Kerrigan, 16. Cam Jordan, 24. 27, Jimmy Smith. 28, Mark Ingram. 31, Cam Hayward. What does it mean to be a part of that historic, like, class in 2011? Because I think this is one of the best draft class to ever come through, and you guys are continuing to write, add on to the legacy. But me personally, just the list alone from the first rounders, I think this is one of the best draft class we've ever seen in the NFL. But what does it feel to be a part of that historic draft class?
Man, it's a blessing, because I'll never forget when we was in New York and we was taking our pictures on the stage in Radio City Hall.
Yep.
And, you know, right before everybody come in, right before we go in the green room, you know, all the guys, everybody who's got invited all in the room taking the pictures before, not even with your team jersey, just before the thing goes on. And Roger Goodell had walked on around the back. He's looking at all of us. He's like, man, and was that the 84 draft that John Elway was in?
I think it was 84 with Marino and things like that.
Yeah. So he was like, man, you know, I've been hearing a lot of talk that this can possibly be one of the greatest drafts to, you know, that we ever had.
Wait, Roger Goodell said that the night of the draft?
And we haven't even been on a team yet, bro. Kid you not. So boom. Now, you know, fast forwarding to, you know, 10 years, you got Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, league MVP, you know, Julio Jones breaking records, Alden Smith, if he was able to stay right. Oh my gosh. Cam Jordan, Jimmy Smith, Mark Ingram,
JJ Watt.
J.J. Watt, Mark Ingram, who's continued to have a great end to his year career. You got Cam Hayward, who's balling in Pittsburgh. And shout out to him being, I think he's the highest paid player over 30, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Newton, league MVP.
Yep.
So it's nothing but
AJ
Green, nothing but great talent. Richard Sherman even is a part of this group.
Chris Harris, yeah.
Yeah. So the list goes on off all the great talent. We had a talented group of men in that 2011 draft class.
Yeah. And that draft was 83 with Elway. So that was
83. Okay. 83.
Yeah. But that 2011 class, man. Just the depth, not just talking about first round players, but like you said, Richard Sherman, Chris Harris, who was a free agent, if not mistaken. This draft class, when it's all said and done, it's hard to kind of argue that right now because a lot of those guys in the A3 draft are in the hall. They got the gold jacket, but based on the career of some of the guys you mentioned, it's kind of hard to argue that most of you guys in the first round, quite a few guys we believe will get into the Hall of Fame at some point in time. So I think that definitely would add more fuel to the fire when it comes to this debate between the 2011 draft and the 1983 draft. But you can always let us know how you feel. Just make sure you leave us a message on social media. If you think the 2011 draft potentially will be better than the 1983 draft when it's all said and done, let us know what you think. Now it's time for Has Pat Heard? And the reason why this part of the show was created, because during the off season, if you know anything about my guy, Pat P, he's not on dry land a lot. He's usually flying around to some exotic place. He's sightseeing or he's just flying around to golf. So when Pat P is usually in the air, a lot of information doesn't get to Pat P. And the main reason why we decided to create this segment of our show is because when Doug Peterson got fired by the Philadelphia Eagles, we actually broke the news to Pat P here on All Things Covered. He had no idea that the Eagles were looking for a new head coach. So we decided to add this part of the show just for Pat P, especially during the offseason. So the first question for you is, did you know that, or have you found out that Antoine Winfield was fined for taunting Tyreek Hill
during the Super Bowl? I did not hear that. He was fined.
You remember he shot him the peace sign at the end of the game and put the peace sign in front of his face? Yeah, the NFL fined him, and that fine amount, and get this for your listeners and viewers, if you don't know exactly how much a fine is, here go the actual numbers. Just for fining, this wasn't a personal foul. This was a taunting fine, and they hit him for a fine of $7,815 for taunting Tyreek Hill in Super Bowl 55. Yes, he was fined.
So, you... So you mean that you're trying to tell me that they fined him, what'd you say, $7,800 for doing this right here?
The peace sign. Yep. Remember he did in front of Tyreek face, I think after an interception or something like that.
I think it was the last play of the game. So tell me this, Eric might be able to find this. Did they even flag Cheetah for when he hit the backflip?
Nah, not to my knowledge, but I can tell you this much. I know for sure. When the Chiefs beat the Browns and when Rashad Higgins got hit by Daniel Sorensen that caused that fumble.
Yeah.
Right. That resulted to a touchback. Daniel Sorensen did not get fined for that hit.
Right.
Even though it was helmet to helmet, it was not called at that time. But if you go back and look at the replay, it was helmet to helmet contact and he wasn't fined, but they fined Antoine Winfield $7,800 for shooting a peace sign.
Man, that's baloney, man. And it's always the defensive guys.
Yeah.
Offensive guys never get fined. I know it's, they're not in position to be fined in a sense. But at the same time, if a guy is running 89 yard touchdown or a 20 yard touchdown, and he turn around and get that to you, that should be acceptable to the same thing of him, doing it in his space.
Yep. And no penalty on that Tyreek Hill backflip.
And no penalty and no fine. So there goes to show you, this is a offense of league. Everything goes to the offense. That's what I don't understand, because at the end of the day, it should go both ways. And that's why I'm going to get on the phone. I got to talk to Roger Goodell. We got to find a way. I'm harping on this, of changing that spot PI file, because it don't make sense.
Hey, you know, every year, Pat P, they always have the league committee and the rules committee that come together during the offseason to kind of go over certain rules. Yeah. Get on the horn.
I got to. I got you, man. Cause it don't make sense to me, man. We can't keep getting penalized. And at the end of the day, if what they should do is if they're going to, I know players getting, you know, the defenseless players. At the same time, guys can't, you know, I think they got to lower that fine as well. Being 2,500, most guys that are making those hits, you know, are league minimum guys. So that's taking their whole check right there. Mm-hmm. So what they have to do is come down lower with these numbers because guys are not able to make a quick judgment in the heat of the battle when they're trying to separate a person from the ball.
Exactly.
Their whole job is goal is defend the end zone or break the ball up by any means necessary. I mean, I get head to head, you know, that's incidental. And I know they're trying to take the head out of the game, but at the same time, when you see it in slow motion and fast, it looks bad. When you see it in slow motion, half of the time, you're not even hitting guys in the head.
Yeah.
So I think they should definitely cut those fines in half somehow, some way versus it being, you know, 25 here, 35. I think it goes up 10,000 every single time.
Oh, but yeah. Them fines get hefty.
Yeah, we gotta find. Yeah, we definitely gotta find a way to, give us a little bit more favorability, man. Because it just always seemed like, you know, fans getting pointed out of the defensive guys. But for me, I love it, man. I love being a villain. It just makes me work that much harder to clean up my technique or whatever the case may be to be sharper.
Now, with it being the off season, like I said, we're changing up the dynamics of the show just a little bit, trying to make this thing more fan friendly, to say the least, and make you guys feel like you're a part of the show. And this is called 21 questions. Granted, number 21, because that's the jersey number that Pat P wears. And the questions will come from some of our faithful listeners and viewers on YouTube or just listening to us, wherever you can find podcasts. This week, we took these questions from Twitter. But if you want your questions to be answered in the future, leave a question attached to a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and we may get to it on the show. But you have to leave us a 5-star rating. So this week, the question comes from Mervin Gomez. Appreciate you, Mervin, for dropping us a question. For Pat P, what would you say is the highlight of your career with the Arizona Cardinals?
The highlight of my career with the Arizona Cardinals. Man, I have so many great ones. I probably say this when I got on the scene, in my opinion. It was my rookie year. It wasn't my first punt return. It wasn't my second punt return, but it was my third punt return. Here's the reason why. It was late in the year. I think it was November, maybe late October. Can't remember when. And you know, Mac, you know, when people be like, man, when rookies get in November, October, they hit that
rookie wall.
Well, yeah. The wall, I never hit the wall, man. I seen to get better. I caught my second win. I actually felt better the second half of the season than I did the first half of the season. But anyway, it was the first Rams game. This is our first time wearing the black jerseys. You played with the Cardinals in 09. So you know what those black jerseys were, how those black jerseys feel with them white bottoms. But that's my first time rocking them. It's a big game for me, man. We're going against Brandon Lloyd. I think it's my second time having an assignment. Man, locking down Brandon Lloyd had me about 2 PBUs, had a pick. They tried a flea flick on me. But here's the highlight of my, that happened in overtime, Matt. When they punted the ball off to me, we went in overtime. We just stopped them, got a 3-and-out, and they punted the ball off to me. The whole time in my head, I'm like, man, if they give me a shot, I'm gonna try to take this to the crib. And I know Donnie Jones, a former LSU guy, he was known for his hang time. Like, he always just punted it very far and had like crazy hang time. But I also knew their gunners wasn't very good. I mean, their gunner guys wasn't very good. And I felt like I had the best vice players in the game, which was, AJ Jefferson and Richard Marshall. We never double vice anybody. It was always single. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you go singles and you got 2 corners that can single, you put extra people in the box. So now we gaining 2 extra guys in the box.
Yep.
So boom. And it was like a plus 50 and we still didn't double them, Max. So that's how much trust we had in these guys. So boom, Donnie Jones kicked the ball back and I look at the ball and like, yo, I got opportunity. And people always thought I was lying when I say I look at the ball 3 times until I actually catch it. Mm-hmm. I always look at the ball.
Why were you doing that?
Because I'm trying to engage and see where the gunners are, because those are closest guys that can disrupt my timing from, you know, getting where I want to go. So boom, as soon as he kicked the ball off, because 9 times out of 10, I know exactly in the area they're going to kick it in depending on the hash they're on. So He was on the right hash, and Dunny is a horrible place kicker. He always just bomb it in hang time. So yeah. He put the ball in the middle of the field, which is the worst thing you can do to a good punt returner, is putting the ball in the middle of the field, giving him a two-way go. Mm-hmm. So, boom, I catch the ball. Well, I look at the ball, look at my gunners, look at the ball, look at the gunners again. Then the third time I took a quick peek because the ball was coming down at this time. So, boom, so now I took that third quick peek. I was like, oh, I got a shot. Catch the ball. Obviously, I kind of knew I was somewhere in the end zone or somewhat close to the end zone because I was backpedaling a little bit. Mm-hmm. Caught the ball, took that thing 99, man. It was the longest punt return, tied for the second longest punt return in NFL history. The longest in overtime. You know, that game right there just put me over the top because it showed that, you know, I was a complete player, you know, mm-hmm. going on the defensive side of the ball, forcing a PBUs, getting interception, making some big tackles on Steven Jackson, Jackson that game, and also icing the game with the walk-off home run. So that game right there is probably the highlight of my career.
Big time.
Yeah. And we got one as well from the same Mervin. Twitter handler, Mervin. Can you describe the feeling of winning a Super Bowl and what made you sign Arizona the following season in 2009?
Well, the feeling of winning a Super Bowl was a surreal feeling. You know, I think for most players, when you get to the National Football League, and you kind of, you know, solidify yourself as an individual player. You want a championship. You want to chase that ring. And, being able to do that is something that, you know, you won't forget because you just remember the process. You know what I mean? Right. So being able to get to that moment, you know, as a child, that was a game that I always watched, was a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And to say I was playing in one, was a monumental achievement. You know, it was a monumental team achievement, and just being able to get to that level. It was a dream come true. And I think when you look at the second Super Bowl for me, we played against Arizona. And at that time, you know, Arizona was an organization that was not known as a competitive, consistent organization. But that year in 2008, in 2008, man, they got hot at the right time in the playoffs, similar to what we did in 2005. So crazy because I played against the Cardinals. And then when free agency started and I started getting wind about the teams wanting me, thinking about, you know, bringing me in, and, Arizona was that team. See, the thing about Arizona, why I had ties with Arizona at the time, the head coach was Ken Wisenhunt. So he was with us in Pittsburgh, and I knew he was a fan of my game, when he was in Pittsburgh, because he was the OC. And, you know, in my earlier part of my earlier career, especially my rookie year, you know, just, I was a part of the scout team defense. So I was always going against his wide receivers. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and at that time I wasn't in the starting lineup yet. So my scout team reps felt like game reps. So they used to have to tell me to slow down a little bit. Cause I was, you know, like, Mac, man, you don't have to give us that type of look, but that was my game. So Ken was a pretty, knew about me, and I respected him as an individual, the same, cause he said, for the respect he had for me. And it kind of all kind of fit, you know what I mean? They were trying to kind of bring Pittsburgh West to Arizona. And I remember, when things kind of heating up a little bit about Arizona and myself, you know, I was definitely considering Pittsburgh. And I remember at that time they were trying to get the big fish in the sea, which was Kurt Warner. You know what I mean? So they were trying to bring Kurt Warner back, and I was the top guy on their list outside of Kurt Warner. And they just, you know, offered a little more than Pittsburgh at the time. So it felt weird because I had just played against Arizona. And I remember when I first got out there, man, I kept hearing, oh, y'all shouldn't have won. Like I went out there to work out with the guys. Coach John Lott had us out there.
John Lott and your boy Darnell Dockett.
Yeah, out there had us running barefoot and everything like that. You know, running laps around the field barefoot. And I kept hearing, man, B-Mac, man, you know y'all wasn't supposed to win the game. So I'm like, yo, man, I'm not a Steeler anymore. I'm a Cardinal, so bad. But I had to deal with that. You know, going through training camp, I mean, it kept telling me, man, y'all wasn't supposed to win. We were a better team. So, but it was a good experience. And the crazy part about it, how life can come around 360 at you. I know you remember this. So during my year out in Arizona. Yeah.
Green Bay,
Pat P was, you were at LSU.
Sophomore.
Yeah. You were a sophomore.
I'm sophomore.
Yeah. So it's funny. So I had Pat came and visit me and came and check out a game, and we hung out a little bit. And I gave you like a whole bunch of clothes. You remember, I always give you whatever I wasn't rocking.
Yes, sir.
And it's funny. Then it's like a few years down the line, Pat P walking through the same hallways that I was walking through. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's funny how life can kind of come at you 360.
It, it, it was the next year.
No, it was 2 years. Cause you were, that was 2009 season.
You didn't play,
but you played one more year. Yeah, you played one more. So 2010 is when I went back to Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So,
that was your sophomore year.
So 2010. Yeah. So you played when you went back to
2009.
You was there 2 years.
Yeah.
11 was your last year, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Okay. Yep.
But it's funny because I remember I still got the picture and everything when you came to the game, but I'm like, man, this man just got drafted to the Steelers. I'll be back to the Cardinals. So, and you know, what's also funny, our other cousin, Walter McFadden, we called Jamal, he ended up playing for the Steelers. When I ended up leaving the Steelers as well, he went out to the Steelers for a little short period of time. So it's funny how things kind of circle around 360 at you.
No doubt about it. Hey, man, I matter of fact, I still remember that outfit to this day. I had a white shirt on with a black, red, and white plaid shirt.
Plaid shirt and that folded at the elbows. You remember that was, that was the style when you could fold at the elbows?
Yes, sir. I think I had some black jeans on too. I still remember it, though.
Yeah.
We was, because we was going, I think that's my first time eating In-N-Out Burger out here too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, had that In-N-Out.
Yeah, first time. You know, for us on the West Coast, I mean, on the East Coast, we used to always hear about In-N-Out.
Yeah.
So I know that's one of the first things I used to do when I was out in Arizona. Also, too, go to, what was the name of the soul food spot out in Phoenix? They had that good Kool-Aid.
Lolo's.
Lolo's, sir.
Yeah. Hey, they got some, never mind. I ain't gonna sit on the podcast. They might be watching.
Yeah, but it's crazy, man. Pat P came and visited me when LSU, when he was in his LSU, in his career at LSU, and then he gets drafted out to Arizona. So it's funny how things can come back at you at 360. But now it's time to toss the break. It's halftime for us. But on the other side of halftime, we'll be joined by someone we can call a three-time world champion. Stay tuned. Larry Foote will be joining us on the opposite side of the half.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Yo, we're back from halftime. Got an opportunity to make a few adjustments. We promise you guys a very, very special guest, right, on the opposite side of the half. And currently we're here. Man, this is a guy that I've been knowing for a long, long time. Pat P knows him as well. I first met this guy in 1999 when I was in high school. We definitely would get into the details of that story throughout this conversation. 13-year NFL vet, one of just a few guys to be my teammate as well as Pat P's teammate. Currently, outside linebacker coach for the new world champions of the world, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he's also a three-time Super Bowl champion. He won two with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He just won his third with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I've been joking with him since this happened because he shot me a text. He's like, B-Mac, I'm leaving you in the dust. I got a new ring. But I feel like Pat P, when you're a coach, it counts as a half ring. It's not the same as a player winning a championship. So I'm giving him credit for 2.5 rings. But in all, man, an outstanding player, a former player, outstanding coach, and just a great all-around guy. Larry Foote is joining us here, all things covered. Foot Dog, what's happening with you?
What's popping?
Man, it's an honor to be on here, man. The B-Mac and Pat P show. Hottest thing in the streets. Maybe the hottest thing in the streets.
Yes, sir. Print the t-shirts. And you're going to keep us hot because we know you got some hot takes coming along with you. Man, number one, man, I know you still on cloud nine. The championship just over a week ago, right, was an outstanding game for you. When you look at Tom Brady, man, how much – did you enjoy the season with Tom Brady? And then looking at the parade,
You know, because you told me before, Tom Brady is a serious guy. When it's time to get ready for ball, he's dialed in, he's focused. But it seemed like he let everything down during the parade, the boat parade you guys had to improvise and take part in. But just take us through this season with Tom Brady, you know, being in his life for quite some time, because he was there your freshman year at Michigan, if not mistaken. You played against him quite a few times in your professional career. And now coaching on the staff that he's a part of as a player. Just take us through that. And then, of course, the parade.
Well, I played my first 2 years with him at Michigan, and he's the same guy. You know how the quarterbacks, you know, sometimes they might be, it's the team and the quarterbacks. He's always been part of the team. He's one of the guys, humble guy. When I say he's one of the guys, like, he's always trash talking. You seen that exchange during the game with him and the Honey Badger. Yeah. Like, and you played against a B-Mac. You know that. You too, Pat Pete. He ain't shying away. He ain't loud like Phillip Rivers, but if you talking, you bring that noise to him, he going to give it right back to you. Yeah. And he's just one of the guys, you know, on the field and off the field, humble guy. I think he got a little bit of politic in him because, like, I give you a little inside, like, just people throughout the building, he's writing handwritten letters to him, just talking about how you appreciate him. He speaks to everybody. Everybody's comfortable talking to him. He's signing autographs all day long, you know, people taking pictures with him. And he never hesitates. He's always, you know, just speaking to people. He's just that guy. That's why it's easy to follow him. It's easy to follow him. And when he speaks, you know, everybody listens. When he get the offense up at 8 o'clock in the morning of the day of the game to go over some last minute adjustments, you know, everybody's willing because, you know, he earned that right. Just how he right. treats people.
Man, it was definitely a fun season to watch you guys how it unfold and watch you guys take on the Lombardi Trophy. But we're going to get back into Brady and your Buccaneers. But let's talk about how you and B Mac first shared this recruiting trip on Michigan, man. I know you always got some hot takes, man. Fill me in on that.
Man, well, I think we had the B-Mac come to Michigan. It just happened to be snowing. Uh-huh. And every time a top recruit, a five-star, first-team All-American coming on campus, you know, normally one of the coaches are looking for me because they know I'll take them down to Detroit, have a good old time.
You know, get that commitment.
You know, they'll be around the head coach or the parents like, hey, you stay away from Detroit and, you know, start yelling at me. As soon as the parents turn their back, he said, hey, something happened to him. You call me now. You take him down now. And B-Mac come with no coat. It happened to be probably below zero, snow. I don't know. We probably had to take somebody. You had to get him a coat. And, you know, Master P, I still remember Master P. The hottest thing out, B-Mac with that big smile. It was even bigger back then. We had him in the club. You know, we tearing the T-shirt off.
Oh, Lord.
He had a great time. You know, Pappy, he don't drink. But right. He's the drunkest one in the crew. He don't drink.
Hey, Pat P, when I left the club, I ain't have no shirt on. Man, I went in the club, like Foot said, I borrowed somebody's coat. I went in the club fully dressed. When I left, man, I had no shirt on, man. I just had my pants, my socks, my drawers, and my shoes, man. I walked out, and that cold air hit my chest.
Oh, man.
I wish I would have seen that.
We jumping in somebody's backseat. We had a great time. But, you know, I've been around that. I know them guys down there, they're not coming up here when they see that snow. They're not coming up there.
No chance.
I won't get Florida State in trouble, but I think, you know, they convinced him to come down. But I thought, well, we at least number two, B-Mac. Because we had a great time, Pat.
Oh, man, we had a great time. The thing that hurt me with Michigan, number one, it was snowing. It was cold. And they had, at that time, Pat, they were, like, changing the dynamics of the dorms. But they had community bathrooms. So that means I would have to share the shower and the bathrooms with whoever it was in the dorm. That kind of turned me off. And then when I go to other places like Florida State, you know, we had more privacy. So that was a big...
You had your own space.
Yeah, you had your own space. Now, granted, they were getting ready to build some new dormitories for the athletes and things like that. But when I got there, man, everybody had to share the same thing. But, man, I tell Foot this all the time. Michigan was always one of my childhood favorites because I was a big C. Wood fan. You know what I mean? I wanted to wear the black spat. And I remember Lloyd Carr came, and when he first visited me, like my sophomore year, he came down there. He was like, man, we just lost Woodson, man. We're looking for another one. And I'm like, man, you got me. I'm coming up on a visit. So Foot right. was there. Dave Terrell was there. Crawford. We went to a basketball party at somebody's townhouse, man. So I was just like, man, all these guys I grew up watching. But it just was too cold, and those community bathrooms is what turned me off.
Yeah, Cato June, we had to run that number two. We just snatched that number two for Cato.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, don't tell Cato that now. Hey, don't tell Cato that now. But boy, I was gonna try to get that number two. That's gonna be part of the whole plan. If I come to Michigan, I gotta rock number two. Yeah, right. I gotta rock number two. But hey, Pat, listen, that No Limit Soldiers was dropping, and that was the first song that made me feel like I was back at the crib, like I was back home. Right. Man, I was on the dance floor by myself the whole night. No, I don't need no water. Just let me go, man. I left it all out there, man.
You sliding too. You sliding back then, man. You sliding back then. He represented Miami. He represented. Yeah.
I know he ain't gonna let us down. No, sir.
Hey, and talking about Michigan foot, man, like 22 years ago, you was a freshman at Michigan. And like you said, the quarterback for your team was Tom Brady. Man, how surreal is it to know 22 years from then, you guys just won a championship with Tom Brady? Like, did you ever think that that was a possibility, knowing that, yo, this man was my quarterback as a freshman 22 years ago, and now look where we are?
Well, I always knew he was going to be good. Can't nobody ever tell the future that he's going to be the greatest all time, win 7 Super Bowls. But
right.
Looking back, every time we was behind, because we was a heavy run, you know, Big Ten. We was a heavy run first, throw the ball on third down. But every time we was behind and we just let him do his magic, he always brought it back. When we down there in Miami kicking with you, when we beat Alabama, we was down 14
in the Orange Bowl.
Twice in the Orange Bowl. Mm-hmm. We was down 14 twice, and he just did his magic, brought us back to the for victory. But, you know, I always cracking on him. You know, he stole a couple of them before you got there from us, a couple rings. In Pittsburgh, you know, he always talking trash. You know, I bring up Spygate. He said, man, I ain't need no Spygate. He'll talk about Casey Hampton. Every time I see Casey Hampton in that plus technique, I knew his fire zone.
Hey, Foot, Coach Foot, break down a plus technique, because, you know, a lot of people are listening and watching us. Right. They might not know what a plus technique is. Break that down.
Well, Casey Hampton, the true definition of a plus is, you normally would be an old school odd front. We call it tight, where he's just head up or the center, old school 3-4. Now, when you see him in his butt in the A-gap, and he's plussed over, and we always call it plus. He'll be sort of tilted on the center, but you'll see his big old butt in the A-gap taking up the whole A-gap.
Right.
And normally we be in that, we bring some type of pressure. He said, I always read Casey Hampton. If he was in that plus, I'm throwing it outside, throwing an out route on one of them corners.
And real quick, that's ironic, because most quarterbacks don't read the nose guard to determine what's going in the secondary. So that tells you how unique and cerebral Tom Brady was to be able to recognize what our nose guard was doing and understanding what he would see from the secondary coverage.
Oh, he was going more detail. He was talking about our outside linebackers, like they in the six technique. A six technique is when you're head up of the tight end, and normally you're doing that, you're playing some type of shell defense. You're trying to steal a gap, trying to two-gap it a little bit, because you're going to be a little light in the box. But he said he'll read all those things, and he is a student. And if you ain't right, if your right foot is up all the time when you're dropping, or left foot, he's going to know it.
He's going to know.
He look for those things to have an advantage.
Wow. Man, that's crazy, boy. That's why he the top.
No doubt about it. And we talked to Levante David maybe about 3 shows ago, and he talked about how TB12 told his teammates after the NFC Championship, what are you crying for? The work is not done. So with that question, how much crying was it after the Super Bowl victory?
When the work was done.
Up too, I'm kind of mad at this podcast, because y'all was cussing on there. And your bleep guy, he got to be a little sooner with it.
Come on, Eric.
Hey, Foot, you said your son was watching it? You said your son was watching it?
Yeah, they watching it. And they had on NFL Network. So it's on NFL Network first, so they go right to YouTube, and they watching it. I don't know if they might have downloaded it. These kids are so advanced. They know everything. So my 6-year-old say, Levante David on B-Mac and Pat P show, they cussing. I'm like, just a couple weeks before, Devin White, after we beat New Orleans Saints, they cussing. And as soon as I get home, you know, they just the cuss police.
Hey, Fritz, sometimes we got the filter to unfiltered.
Hey, after the Super Bowl party, I had to bathe them with holy water after hearing Ludacris and Migos at the party.
Oh, that's where y'all had a job party?
Yeah. Oh, they lived it too. We ain't get home till 4:30 in the morning.
Hey, where y'all had the after party at?
Down at the aquarium, right downtown.
Oh, man. Y'all had it, man. Y'all did it right, man.
Oh, they had y'all to, did man. It right. Like Levante told us, man, it was – Foot was fortunate. He didn't get the dog years in Tampa when they were just bad at the bottom of the barrel. So, man, it's been a long time coming.
I'm so happy for him. It's going to be equivalent to when Pat P get one out there in Arizona. You know what I'm saying? Went through all the dog years. But to go hey, back man. To the question, though, man, that Tom Brady, that's his you know, he's straight business. And I was kind of looking at him after the Green Bay game because everybody was taking pictures with the NFC Championship trophy.
Yep.
And they were loving on that thing. I'm like, hold up. Hey. I don't know about the pictures for the grand with that one. But everybody was excited. That was funny. I was trying to – then nobody wanted to dime him out. I'm trying to figure out who was crying. I was still trying to figure out who was crying. I heard this guy went –
And Mickens, I think he
out.
Said Mickens also. Yeah. I think it was Mickens or somebody else.
I tell you what, B Mac, and I'm quite sure I put it on our group chat. Man, these boys party. I'm talking about when we beat Green Bay, man, we was probably 2 hours late. It turned into a club. I'm talking about dancing.
In the locker room?
It was so excited. Like, I'm like, man, they beat me. They beat us when we did it in 05. These cats was like they was on cloud nine, and you know I just felt like that proud papa watching.
Man, that's awesome, what's up. Man. Hey, so hey, Foot, you had another former teammate that was able to get to that moment with you guys and win a championship, in Antonio Brown. You know, he scored a huge touchdown in the Super Bowl en route to that victory. But what was his attitude like when he first got with the team, and what made this relationship between Antonio and the Buccaneers work out?
Man, I think. I was telling somebody earlier, he matured big time. Like when he came in there, at first you heard a little bit of like the little wide receiver. You know, all wide receivers, they want the ball. And I heard him a little bit like the first game, but man, he been a model citizen. And you know how AB worked. And he changed the culture. When I say that, AB is just like Tom Brady, as far as when he hit that grass, he's all business. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you see about 10 guys over there warming up with him because he do a dynamic stretch, like warm up. Like he got the bands on, he's running hundreds, and he's serious. All of a sudden, you see 2 guys over there with him, 3 guys. Then, before you know it, it's a couple defensive players over there. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, them young guys seen what it take and how he worked. And like every day when he was out there, he was working. And, you know, if you play with Tom Brady and all of them had to take a back seat because he ain't just featuring one wide receiver. He's throwing it to the open guy.
Yeah.
Mm. He's throwing it to the open guy. And if you want championships, if you want it, you know, you want that experience, everybody got to give a little bit. Everybody got to give a little bit. And, you know, it helps being, you know, the GOAT. You know, you calm the wide receivers, the attitudes down, but everybody bought in. But, man, he was – you ain't have – everybody had their little reservations about him, holding reservations on him, but he was a perfect model citizen.
Would you like for the Buccaneers to bring him back, re-sign him?
Yeah, absolutely. Every team. Every team should want Antonio Brown. Every team should. I seen what he did, and them young boys, Scotty Miller and them guys, they going to benefit seeing that. They seen it up close, what it take. If you want to be a Hall of Famer, that's what it take.
Do you think he will be a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt. Absolutely. No doubt. And remind me of Pat Peterson out there with them bands running and stuff. I'm like, don't they know we got to practice? What are they doing?
Hey, you got to get nice and loose, buddy.
Hey, I'm like, y'all going to cramp. Hey, y'all going to make it through. Be back. You know how we was before practice. We chilling. We use practice, middle of the practice to get warmed up.
To get warmed up, yeah.
Man, that's that old school foot.
But that's why, that's why Pat P first ballot Hall of Fame.
No
that's
question.
They put that work in.
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, so Foot, talking about giving a little, this is a two-part question. Mm-hmm. Do you think the NFL should push back the NFL hiring process? And why do you think Todd Bowles and Lefty, Byron Lefty, Leftwich didn't get much interaction during the hiring circuit.
Well, they definitely should push it back. You hear that? I mean, previous times, some owners and GMs might be, you know, you see this run might have, you know, hurt themselves, hurt the evaluation right. process. Bowles did get a couple interviews, but it was just only Zoom. He didn't have the luxury of meeting in person or whatnot. You know, a lot of those big time deals, it got to be there. It got to be in person, across from each other, and just, you know, that owner got to feel comfortable. I think, me personally, without going in all into the other direction, I think they dropped the ball not interviewing Leftwich. I think they probably just said, well, he's still young. We'll just hold off. I think some teams missed the dropped the ball on that one. And, you know, going forward, though, he's going to be a head coach one day, no doubt about it. And especially everybody, you know, they look for the next offensive guy and whatnot and getting to communicate with the quarterback. This guy, first-round pick, did it on a high level. And he knows the game. He knows the game. So I know his time is coming. Bowles definitely deserves another shot. People that know the inside know the Jets. It just wasn't a good situation. And I'm quite sure he's going to get another opportunity.
I agree.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, those two coordinators for the Buccaneers, you know, me and Pat P talked about the diversity that BA incorporated with his staff, you know, last week leading up to the ball game. It has been well documented. But what makes it a special group to be a part of with you as well being a minority, being on that staff, being able to hoist the sticky Lombardi and just being a part of something that was groundbreaking?
First of all, coming in the office, like everybody, like as a staff, everybody gets along. I think BA does that. He makes sure everybody's a good fit. You got to be a dude that everybody likes. You know, BA likes to have adult beverages. He likes to kick it. You know, Ty Bowles, he's a communicator. He likes to hang out. And all throughout our staff, everybody gets along. Like, he got good people. And, you know, you want your locker room the same way with the players. You got to get guys that can fit with people. And that's the great thing about it. You love coming to work. You know, I talked to other coaches around the league. I had the 1 year on Wilk's staff. It kind of wasn't like that. Wasn't terrible, but it wasn't like with the BA staff. You know what I'm saying? Just you love coming in. You know how it is in the locker room. You love coming in there just for the camaraderie. And it makes your job easier. It makes you want to work and put in extra hours.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Hey, talking about obviously Bowles, what were some of the key points of slowing down that Kansas City offense? Because we know that they're very capable of putting up 40-plus points each and every time they're out there on that football field. What were the key points? Obviously, we knew you guys took away the deep ball. But give us a little bit of insight. What was you guys' game plan going into that game?
Well, we know Andy Reid and those guys, they're not a big run team. And somebody to argue, you got Patrick Mahomes, you ain't gonna run the ball that much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we got enough guys up front. We have the luxury D line wise where we can stop your run with 6-man box.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We can slow it down enough so we can do our 2-shell defense. We can hold up. And that's, you know, we just got that luxury up front. We got guys that can get after, they can 2-gap. Beat their man and get off and make the play. So we did enough to slow the run down so our pass rushers can just get at Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, Bowles. And our young DBs, they grew up. And it started way through the year. And they just said, hey, it's that time. That light switch went off. The communication rolled. Yeah. And them guys are playing lights out. I know our up front get all the attention, but them young boys grew up. They communicated. And when you did that, and everybody, what were you doing? And believe it or not, some of them calls, we didn't know what they were doing. But we had, you know, audibles, but they communicated.
Yeah, right.
You know how it is, you come to the sideline, hey, what you gonna do? Hey, if everybody on the same page, it ain't a bad call.
That's what Nick Lombardi said, tell us.
You're loud, you're right, pretty huh?
Yeah, it is. So sometimes, you know, during the sideline, we're like, man, what they in? What they doing? Okay, third. Punt team. Hey, we talked to them on the sideline. But they communicated, and Bowles was definitely pressing on them young boys. You know, a lot of times, young guys, they're not comfortable. And they're towards the end of the year, them boys grew up. right before.
Yeah. Did y'all lose to Kansas City before the bye week or after?
Right before the bye week.
Yeah. That was the last loss.
That's when it turned around right there. Nope. I believe. You know, and you guys just want to run.
You remember this, your first Super Bowl year, this reminds me of the 05 team. We had a lot of expectations because the year before you came in, we were 15-1 and we lost three in a row. And it was just like the Colts. Remember the Colts beat us, but we knew if we play them again, we have a good chance because in the second half, we kind of like shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the same mindset with Kansas City. Them boys knew watching the tape, oh, we're going to be able to get them.
Yeah.
And we beat them in the Super Bowl and they was confident.
Yeah.
And Kansas City, you know, they do what they do. And Bulls, you know, everybody knows that Andy Reid even admitted he was one step ahead of them.
And, no question.
You know.
No question. And talking about the confidence, one of your more confident defenders in JPP, Jason Pierre-Paul, you know, he spoke confident about the group and he was able to put those verbal actions out on the football field. JPP's 32, Shaq Barrett is 28. Those two guys came with big time playoff experience based on what they did throughout this playoff stretch. They also combined for 16 pressures in the Super Bowl alone. 16 pressures in the Super Bowl alone. Now, Foot, I tip my brim to you because I know you were hands-on with these guys the entire season, and not just those two guys, but the entire outside linebacker group. You know, what was your approach in coaching that tandem to be able to not just dominate in the Super Bowl, but the entire playoff run? Those two guys caused nothing but terror for any tackles they faced.
Oh, man, that's the easiest coaching assignment in the game. Get out their way. Get out the way. I just, you know, pass rushes. I'll just always hone them in, play the run, you know, play the run. That was a particular game, you know, the old school Bill Cowher, hey, rush the passer, stop the run on the way. And they love that approach. They love that approach. You know, we had to watch the whole run game on Wednesday. I said, look, stop the run on the way to the pass, to the quarterback. And them guys love that. They love the challenge. The biggest stage, and they knew the pressure. If we're going to have a chance to win, we're going to have to get at Patrick Mahomes, just like the week before with Aaron Rodgers. If we're going to beat those guys, you got to disrupt that quarterback. And JPP having a Super Bowl ring, beating Tom Brady, he know the game. Hey, if you don't get that quarterback, they're going to get us.
Yeah.
Right.
So them guys stepped up big time. It's easy to coach them. I was more fired up because my young boy out of Wagner, Cam Gill, free agent, got a half a sack for his fumble.
49?
49,
yeah.
49. He played probably like 7 snaps. And this is the first time he get mad at me, B-Mac. Because he get the half sack, force fumble, and JPP take off. Go back out there and get him. And he come to the sideline, why are you taking me out? And I just started joking with him, laughing. Hey, man, what you doing? You a young boy. You don't come in this game making no plays like that. I yelled at you, ain't playing no more. And he was mad. He started laughing, but he was fired up.
You
can't take him out when he get a sack. Put him in the zone.
I didn't do it. Jason took off. Jason didn't like, you know them young boys. They don't want, you know them old heads. They don't want them young boys in there eating. He got that sack. JPP threw that Gatorade bottle down and took off.
Oh, man. Hey, so you talk about coaching. What actually got you into coaching? So we know you as a great football player, playing on some great team. What actually got you into coaching? Because I had an opportunity to play with you your last two seasons in the league. And, you know, I with B.A. signing you, that's kind of what he wanted you to do. Was it B.A. that got you into coaching? When did coaching cross your mind?
My old coach, Keith Butler, the coordinator in Pittsburgh, he planted that seed in my head a little bit, as well as Mike Tomlin. And when I was ready to retire, B.A. said, no, you about to coach.
Mm.
And I tell like Hines Ward, a lot of them guys, Antoine Randall, sometimes you got to come in through the league quality control, late hours, a lot of computer, a lot of breaking down film. That would have been a struggle for me. I don't know. That wouldn't have been that, you know what I'm saying, enticing for me. But B.A. said, no, I'm giving you your own room. Like, you coaching the linebackers. And that's when I took off. I said, you know what? I'm with that. But it was really B.A. He was up front. He was bold about it. He had a lot of confidence in me. We had a lot of years together. He knew what I bring to the game and my approach to it. And I'm definitely fortunate for that, because normally that's not the norm. I always had to talk Hines Ward off the bridge, like, hey, man, don't look at my situation. Joey Porter, like, don't be – B.A. just a unique guy, an awesome guy. If he believe in you, if he got your back, he don't care. And I was definitely in the right place at the right time, and I thank God for it. But I'm always, you know, all the old heads, like Mike Caldwell – you remember Coach Caldwell, Pat? He was saying, man, you get that buzz. It ain't the same as a player, but you get that buzz.
Yeah.
Get that buzz. And the pay's good. It ain't like the player. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be a struggle getting you to coach all that money he done made, right? Be mad.
No question. He's going to take a big-time pay cut. Yeah.
No, he's gonna do it just to get out the house, B Mac. He might donate the coach's check back.
hey, Foot, talking about coaches, man, me and you had the luxury of playing under one of the best to ever do it. What was the biggest lesson you learned from Coach Dick LeBeau?
Man, he was cool in all situations.
Yeah.
Super Bowl to preseason to training camp to spring practice. First game, big rival game against the Ravens, Dick LeBeau was the same. And you hear a lot of coaches talk that talk. No. He talked it and walked it. He was always the cool, too cool to my liking sometimes, because B-Mac used to cuss me out because I wouldn't give him a call. Offense then lined up, did a shift of motion, and Dick LeBeau still ain't gave the call.
Ain't gave the call. We sitting there waiting.
Hey, he'll cuss you out on the sideline, but why you ain't called nothing?
Right. Give me something. You the mic,
but right. But he was good about it, though, because he will always tell us, hey, on third down, I want this. So he'll give you about five calls that he wants you to, to shoot. Right. But he was cool. But the main thing is he never blinked. Like, he was always cool. He never blinked. And that's what you take from him. And he showed up. You know, like some coaches, they get there on the first bus. They there 3-4 hours. Dick LeBeau was coming in with the last bus.
Yes.
You know, the home games, you know, like some of us, we got like 10 minutes late. He right along with us.
Cruising. that little strut he be walking in the building with. Yes, yep. Sir.
And he ain't had no script. He ain't had none of that, Pat. No. On the sideline, uh-uh. He called us from all up here.
Yes.
Damn. Yeah. Man, that's
no script at all.
Hey, so man, we at the tail end of our show. But before we let you two go, because we know you two always talking about y'all, you know, masterminds of trivia, and you know this, you know that. Well, we gonna put that to the test here today. I got
Pat. I ain't gonna disrespect the man in his house, Pat. You know, my mama raised me right. I can't do that to this man's house. But hey.
Hey Pat, so was coming at me before we even started. Long back, don't make me stump you right quick.
Oh man, so all right, we got college players, and I'm gonna give you the name. You guys got to tell me. Well, I'm gonna give a name to Larry B-Mac. You guys got to tell me what school they went to. You don't have to tell me the year, but you got to tell me what school they went to.
All right,
you ready? This should be an easy one for Larry Foot. Lito Shepherd,
Florida. He went to Florida.
No, that ain't for you, Mac. That ain't for you.
He might not know it, though, Pat. He might not know it.
He came out my class.
That was too easy for Foot.
We'll go to B-Mac. We'll go Mark Simonu.
Oh. Why my question harder than Foot question?
Hey, man,
you the host.
I want to say Penn State.
Nah, I got a state in it.
Foot don't even know that one. I know he played. It's not Kent State. I thought it was Penn State.
He's close.
Oh, I thought it was Penn State. Who is it?
Kansas State.
I knew he had a state Kansas in it. State. Foot, you didn't know that one, did you?
Hey, I'm respecting your question.
All right, Foot. Here we go. Let's go for Foot. We got Roosevelt Colvin.
Ooh, Purdue.
That's too easy. That's Big Ten. That's
not easy. That ain't too easy. That's old school. I know that.
He played against him.
Hey, I'm just looking at the list, man.
Ain't this show over with? Ain't this show over with?
Mac, I'm going to give you an easy one.
What we got? What we got?
Let's go, Eric. Wrap the show up, Eric. I'm about to drop that F-bomb, Eric.
Marion Barber, B-Mac.
Minnesota, that's too easy.
Yeah, exactly. All right, but I'm gonna test you on this one, Foot. Let's go, Tim Dwight.
Come on, man.
That's too easy. That's Iowa, another Big Ten.
Iowa.
Who drafted him, Foot? Who drafted him?
Chargers.
And then when he,
I answered that question. Chargers. Hey, all Eric, right. Can you wrap the show? Who do you got behind the scenes?
Right,
hey, where the sponsors at? Who are sponsors? Let me introduce our sponsors.
Pat, through the punters.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to do.
The punter.
What
is punter? What do punter mean? What is that?
Hold on. Boom.
Who the punter? We got a punter. Right. Here we go.
You ready?
Yeah, we ready.
All right. This is for B Mac. We got, Mitch Berger.
Oh, you just have a Mitch? Man, Mitch, what school Mitch went to?
Oh, Mitch was old.
Yeah, he played with us. You know, Mitch used to always be intoxicated.
Yeah, Mitch.
West Virginia?
No.
Nope.
Mitch
South Carolina?
No, he didn't go to South Carolina. He probably was the wildest player we had on our team too. Our punter, you remember Mitch used to go hard in the streets.
Oh yeah. He was drunk.
Well, Mitch went to Colorado.
Colorado. Hello. Man, I didn't know that. West Virginia.
And I'm gonna give this one to Larry for the last one. Zaire Hakeem.
Punter?
No, he's a ball player.
Zaire?
Yeah, he's not a
UCLA.
Punter. Nope. On that coast though.
What was his last name?
California.
Nope. Hakeem.
Zaire Hakeem. Arizona.
No, the wide receiver. San Diego State.
Yeah. There you go.
Part of this great turf.
A great show on turf.
Yep. San Diego State. All right, man.
I don't like how Foot had easier questions than me. Everything was in the Big Ten.
I'm just going off the list, man. You gotta holler at Eric.
Hey, I gotta get this tape too. When y'all gonna send me this tape?
We ain't sending you nothing.
Hey, I gotta get this tape. Hey, y'all can keep the check. The tape is worth more than the check.
I don't want to bring you down if your Super Bowl high. Hey, Foot. Before we let you go, we're gonna transition to superlatives. Rapid fire question. We want your honest, unbiased answer. Right. So. First question for you. Best?
It can't incriminate me now.
It ain't going to incriminate you. We know you're a ball coach right now. First question for you, Larry Foote. Best defensive unit on the 2008 Steelers? The D-line, linebackers, or DBs? Be honest, too.
Linebackers.
We had the number one secondary. What are you talking about?
Y'all only did that one year. Y'all did that one
in 2008.
And you know, y'all did that one year. Where y'all was at? 7-6. 05, we have to carry y'all a lot of time to be back now. No, linebackers.
All right.
And they used to get ruthless. We used to point the fingers. You know how they say good team? No, we pointed fingers.
Hey, Pat, please, we come to the sideline. Let's say somebody break a long run, somebody catch a long pass. We come to the sideline. Who man was that? And Foot used to be so messy, man. I think that was such and such, man.
They used to be in the huddle getting it going.
Oh yeah, everybody quiet. We're like, man, who had him? Nobody ain't say nothing. Foot be like, man, I think that's such and such bad. Come on, man. And we in the huddle getting ready for the next play.
Oh, I can see that happening. I definitely was in the huddle before with Hood. So
Foot used to be messy. Oh, man. Young Foot, when he had them braids.
Hey, Pat, you need help? You need help this week?
I'm going to tell you one thing, but you know when Foot mad, when he hit you with one of these and get on his toes?
Oh, yeah.
The next one for you, who is the most skilled defensive player that you play with and also the most skilled player that you coach?
Ooh. Well, I want to brag to the host, but, you know, it's a young man named Patrick Peterson.
Appreciate it, coach.
A young man named Patrick Peterson. I give him a couple. One just got in the Hall of Fame, Calvin Johnson. Remember the one year I played in Detroit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But definitely you too, Patrick Peterson and Calvin Johnson, far just flat out skills, nothing you can do about it. Blame God. You know what I'm saying? It's just too much ability. Pat P, eye hand coordination as far as all pro punt returner, all pro cornerback. And you probably would have been all pro wide receiver if you wanted to do that, but definitely.
Hey, coach, real quick. Tell B Mac about that pick that you almost had, the one I tipped to myself. You thought you could have caught it. Man, you weren't going to catch that ball, man. Man.
Did the ball get tipped? Did you tip it?
I tipped it.
And I'm the one in position. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. I'm already thinking about the end zone. And I'm like, kind of, you know, I get nervous a little bit. So I'm like, hey, I'm and man, 21 comes flying and take it. And I'm running behind them like everybody think I'm celebrating. I'm really ready for the get the clothesline in them. You know what I'm saying? Horse collar.
Oh, you going to tackle him?
Hey,
what game was that? What game was that?
It was against the Rams. So here's the funny thing. We down 10 in the fourth, about 7 minutes ago. So I had got a pick the drive before to put us down 3.
Uh-huh.
So came back the next drive later, we paid like some palms coverage. Cause back then when they had Jeff Fisher, all they was run with like those meshers, you know, like those like bullets, like a lot of crosser stuff. So Bowles had put us in his palms and I wasn't even supposed to sit. This is just me being a ball player because the receiver, I think it was Kenny Brick, he came from the opposite side.
Uh-huh.
I already got me a pick the drive before, so I'm trying to get me another one. Man, two and one went vertical. So I put all the stress on the safety. So Kenny Brick running across Larry face because Larry was, the backer. So he ran across Larry face. He was the hook dropper. And now, cause he ran like a shallow crosser. So, and it's pressure. So it's palms. So I forgot who like threw the quarterback off his mark or whatever. He threw it a little long. I tip the ball back. Larry's running on the ball. Mind you, he stumbles on his way to the ball.
Oh, so he already was stumbling.
I don't remember that beat back. I was just trying to get underneath it.
And he's telling me, he said, man, I was going to pick that ball, man. Coach foot was about 2 feet away from the ball, man.
B-Mac, I seen green passes, B-Mac.
You saw Izzo. You tried to get it to paint.
And I don't know how he got the ball because you tipped it and jumped. And you came back down, and the ball was in the air forever, and he grabbed that thing and took off.
He scored back.
The game out for.
Yeah.
Hey, week 10, 2014. Week 10, 2014 versus the Rams. We got to look that one up. Foot, most hated team for you, Ohio State, Baltimore Ravens, or the New Orleans Saints? Who you hate the most?
Ooh. I would say Ohio State because that game meant so much. Mm-hmm. That game meant so much. You know, during our time, we had a leg up on the Ravens.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? When you beat somebody, it's hard. You know what I'm saying? We respected them. We knew what it's going to take to beat them guys. But Ohio State was the one because that carries you forever. You know, I don't even remember how many times I played the Ravens, but Ohio State. And I'm 2-2 with them, and I got to take that to the grave.
Yeah. Last one, Footy, before I let you go. And I know you've been around a lot of magical and wonderful Blu-ray games. Who is the luckiest Blu-ray player you've ever seen?
Ooh, I got the luckiest and scariest guy. And he's at this top corner of this Zoom. I go by the name of Brian McFadden. And this one to say he's lucky and scary. It ain't that many stories out there where he got bopped upside his head.
Oh, no, ain't none of those.
That's being smart.
I call that lucky. All them years, and you survive.
I don't know how you do it, but I'm telling you, I don't know how you do it.
Hey, that's being smart.
That's how he do it. He's scared. He don't take chances. He's disciplined. That's why I know he'll be a great coach in this league. He'll be a mastermind coordinator because he's just
numbers guy.
Couple steps ahead. He's a numbers guy. He's safe. You know what I'm saying? He'll strike when he know it's time to strike.
Right.
But he's like that Floyd Mayweather, a card. You know what I'm saying? When I hit you, it's going to be, you know, I know I'm safe. I can hit you without getting hurt.
Exactly.
Hey, Pat P, let me tell you about Foot. So anytime we used to have a trip to the West Coast, Foot be ready. Like, yeah, where the Blu-ray game at? So we on the plane, the Blu-ray game. This used to happen with Foot all the time. Somebody might boo Foot when they wasn't supposed to boo Foot. So Foot get mad. I'm done playing with, I ain't playing Blu-ray ever again. I'm done. I'm not playing with y'all because y'all be cheating. Y'all be cheating.
Hey, Pat, this was my own fault though because I wasn't a regular. I always pick my spot, you know what I'm saying? And they treated me like,
oh yeah, you know, treated you bad, like, man.
Then I'll go half with somebody. Me and Hines Ward will go half a lot.
Oh yeah, he wouldn't be in the game, but he'll go half. I used to hate that.
I go half a lot because they would never let me be part of it. Every time I'm in there, everybody picking on me. I ain't had no friends. Right.
Hey, man, Foot, man, it's a pleasure, man. We're going to wrap this up, indeed, man. Thank you for joining us. All things covered. Pat P. Bryant, Big Fatty, man. Friend of the show, family member of the show, Foot. I'll say this, you know what I mean? I became a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan this year, and a lot of it had to do with you being on that staff. And we talked about this upcoming season, especially when Tom Brady signed, and you told me, don't jump on the bandwagon now, B-Mac. Don't jump on the bandwagon now. Yeah, you emphasize not jumping on the bandwagon, but I'm on the bandwagon. But, hey, man, best of luck to you this upcoming season, trying to repeat, do something that hasn't been done a lot. And I think the last team to repeat was the New England Patriots.
The Patriots, right? Yeah.
That Tom 03, Brady 04, was a part.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully you guys can get a chance.
And Philly, yep.
Yeah. So hopefully you guys can get a chance to repeat. Well, you know what? I'll say this because we got two individuals that will be tied to some organizations this upcoming season. Hopefully one of you guys can get a chance to get to the promised land. It could be Pat P, you know, even if he's with the Cardinals or whoever, or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers out in what? SoFi Stadium. Yeah. Out SoFi in Stadium. Land.
Yes, and sir. I
know, hey, we know big things coming for you in the near future. Eventually you're going to get that DC title. So, hey, you might be able to coach Pat. But Coach Pat P, because Pat will be playing for another 4 or 5 years. He might be a DC somewhere, bringing Pat in
there. Hey, Pat P, you go over there and, you know, I handle everything over here. That's easy. You ain't got to show up to practice.
Hey, Footman, yes, like, it's a pleasure, man. Thank you for joining us. All things covered, man. Be safe, man, and we'll check you in the near future.
God bless, man. Y'all keep doing your thing. Show is awesome, baby.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thanks again to the champ, Larry Foot, and thanks everybody for listening to this episode of All Things Covered. If you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe and leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We'll be back with you next week where you can expect all things will be covered. Peace.
Peace.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.